Good evening, Stillman.
Good evening, Dave. David.
How goes it?
How goeth it with thee? It is well with I.
Yeah, you sound great. I'm excited. Are you hitting the theater up anytime recently or soon?
Yeah, just the urge for the dramaturgical in my life every once and again, Dave. I played a life-changing role, the role of a lifetime, over this last weekend.
Wow. I mean, I hope that you talked like that for the entirety of it.
More effeminate, but otherwise, yeah.
Before we get into that, we brought him back. We brought back Spencer Gardner. I mean, we didn't actually invite him. He just showed up, but he's here.
He's like a barnacle on our podcast.
Yeah, the groupie. I'm the lurker.
Hey, Spence.
So, Steele, yeah, I heard about this. You had a big weekend. What did you do?
We were in Dubuque, Iowa. This is the gem of Iowa. It's on the Mississippi River, beautiful little river town. And my wife and I, the great Laurel Bastion, we officiated a wedding. I officiated my first wedding.
Oh, wow. What, yeah. Like a ceremony for dogs or what? What kind of ceremony are we talking here?
No, hamsters, Dave, it was for human beings. They were
human?
Great, tremendous, lovely human beings. It's actually Laurel's stepbrother and his fiance got married. They wrote a beautiful ceremony. Well-chosen readings that the brothers of the bride and the groom read. They also chose to give tributes to each partner's parents, which was a lovely thing where they just stood up and said, "Hey, parent, thank you for this and this and this. This is how it's affected my about-to-be spouse, and I appreciate it, and I love you." And it was moving. They wrote great, funny, tender vows, and we were just the officiants. Laurel's done this several times before, and she's got the online certificate, so I just said some stuff. But it was cool. It was really a life-changing experience, you know?
Set the physical scene for me, Steele. I want it to be on the banks of the Mississippi.
Very close.
With wind blowing through a wheat field. What are we doing?
You could see the Mississippi just outside the window. We were indoors because the weather wasn't perfect, but it was sunny and nice. We were at the Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium. We were in a large, brightly lit room with several windows. The flags of the 50 United States were above our heads, and right above the officiants, the two of us, were the state flags of the great state of Wisconsin and the above-average state of Iowa, which is where the home states of the bride and the groom. So that was a particularly nice touch. And we had, you know, there were probably 100, 175 people in attendance. The room was packed. Our son was sitting on his grandma's lap looking at us the whole time, just smiling. And anytime a baby would make a noise, he would go, shh, shh. He was shushing all the babies in the hall. He was like a little usher. It was great.
The masterpiece on the Mississippi, that's Dubuque, huh?
It really is. And the other cool thing was at this museum, that very day, a dinosaur exhibit was opening on the floor just above us. So we performed this wedding with the full knowledge that there were at least a dozen life-size animatronic dinosaurs moving with their newly discovered fur and feathers and making really obscene noises just a few dozen feet away. It increased the romantic quotient a couple 100%.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, I was at your wedding. I was at both of your weddings, actually, still. I like the second one better. Did this plant any regrets in your heart as far as did you wish you could have had animatronic dinosaurs involved in your wedding? Or
well, the thing that I wish I would have done, actually, thinking of speaking of dinosaurs, I wish I would have had my suit tailored so it looked like I had T-Rex arms for the wedding. So I come up and I'm like, and when I put the ring on Laurel, I have to like really lean over, and if she puts the ring on me, I'm like, oh, you know, T-Rex arms would have been like a T-Rex arm suit. That would have made me look like a groom to remember.
No, but it's people in the mood like dinosaurs.
Yeah, seriously, that was our honeymoon theme,
yeah.
Spence.
Just put on Jurassic Park and
we went at it like pterodactyls. All right. So, but the question that I had, I was thinking about this, and I was thinking, because we got to see people up close planning a wedding ceremony and planning the celebration and the party and all the other stuff around it. And there's a lot of decisions people make. And then with the benefit of hindsight, I know both of you guys got married in your early to mid-20s. You're, you know, older and wiser now. if you could go back and think about your wedding celebration, whether the wedding itself or the kind of events surrounding it, is there anything that you wish you would have done or that you would have done differently? So if we have unmarried listeners thinking about their own weddings, any pro tips or advice for them?
I've got a few. So I have an unrealistic one and a realistic one. The unrealistic one is I probably would have done way less. So Emmeline's sister actually eloped in Hawaii. They got married in the Hawaii temple there, and they sent out in their invitations, they basically said, we're getting married on this date in the Hawaii temple and you're welcome to attend, but we don't expect anybody to be there and we'll be having a wicked party on the beach in celebration afterwards. That's always been really tempting to me. I'm not much for ceremony. So yeah, just having the simplicity of a wedding where you show up, do the wedding, and then the festivities are kind of done and you can enjoy just spending time together. That sounds really nice to me.
So if you could redo the wedding one, celebration, it wouldn't be a celebration is what you're saying, Spencer. It'd just be you guys getting married secretly.
I guess so. I mean,
leave the everybody else out of it.
Yeah. I don't like people.
You know, actually, Spence, both Laurel and I have sisters that did that very thing. I have a sister that she and her husband got married with two witnesses, and Laurel's sister, she and her husband got married in Hawaii with nobody from the family there, and some weird, like, burned-out Buddhist hippie priest in tie-dye blowing a conch shell was, like, the only person to witness their wedding.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was, I think so both of them are still doing it. So, I mean,
Realistic one, the change I would have made is I probably would not have had my father-in-law drive Emmeline and I to the hotel that night.
Wow. You just wanted to make sure you could get like a last few pro tips on your way into the hotel, huh?
We just needed a chaperone until the bitter end. No, we were up in Anchorage and didn't have a car, and we were flying out the next morning. So what were we supposed to do? I mean, in retrospect, I could have just called a cab or something, but I don't know.
He had a reliable automobile. I mean, he had a vested interest in you guys.
So he came up to the hotel room for a few minutes, right? He just sat down.
Oh, yeah. He came up and chilled for a little while.
They needed a ride to the airport the next morning, Dave, so I think he stayed the night with him.
Yep, he was there all night. It was awesome.
Yeah, king-size bed, there's plenty of room for three people. That's not an issue.
Just cuddled, watched a movie all night.
He just kind of rolled over with the blanket and was like, all right, I'm going to sleep. Have a good night.
Well, Spence, there's some wisdom. There's some wisdom buried in there if you can find it, listeners.
Huge regret that we have the popcorn machine that was at our wedding reception. The kids showed up. He set it up. He worked with it for like 5 minutes. Couldn't get it to work, and he left. There was no popcorn at the reception. I'm still frustrated. How do you bring a not working popcorn machine? I don't think there was a problem with the machine. I think there was a problem with the kid. He looked about 17, just was, you know, out of his depth. He didn't know what to do with this machine. If I had time, I could have gone and set it up and got it going, but we had no popcorn. Very frustrating.
This is the weird thing, Dave. You read a lot of these marriage planning blogs or wedding planning blogs. Not a lot of people mention hiring the right popcorn machine operator, but they really should. I mean, that makes or breaks a wedding celebration. So if you're out there planning your future wedding, make sure you hire the best popcorn machine operator available in your metro area.
Yeah, we're standing in the reception line. People are coming through and, you know, they're saying congratulations and stuff. But everybody's kind of like, not everybody mentions it, but I'd say 75% of the people are like, hey, there was going to be popcorn, right? What happened? And I had to, like a jackass, I just had to say the machine broke.
And they're like, good luck to you guys, I guess.
Yeah, after they got out of the line, people would go pick the presents up that they brought us and just leave.
Or someone else's present. They didn't even care and take them all.
That reception did kind of bomb in my memory.
One thing, if we could go back and change it, I know that Laurel would say this as well. We would have eaten more at the actual reception. We had great food at our wedding, but we were so busy like thinking about how great this was and talking to people that Laurel got a very small plate of food and then was distracted by other events. And then when the wedding ended and we finished the dance party, she was like ravenously hungry. And it was like 1 a.m. So I ended up having to call around and I found like a Quiznos subs place or something and ordered like a terrible sub sandwich because there were people that would deliver it 2 a.m. or whatever. So she ate some really crappy sub sandwich. But like the thought of all this great food that I was like, hey, honey, it was pretty good food. I think that's something that sticks with her. She's like, I would have eaten more. You just can't take that back. You can't do it over.
Yeah, most of our regrets are going to be food related in any relationship, in any major event. You got to take advantage of the food situation. I'm glad you had a great experience at the Masterpiece of the Mississippi.
That's my little gift to you all.
And I'm excited. We got a great show for the rest of the evening. We're going to talk a little diesel running on gas. We've got an important debate coming your way. And of course, some great songs, Unchained Melodies, and a little bit of book wisdom. I was super excited. It wasn't that long ago. I was sitting down with Ariane. And I got a text message from Steele.
Yep.
And this led to a huge text message exchange between all three of us, which has never occurred before. And it was a seminal event in your lives. Tell me what led to this event and why it happened.
Dave, on this podcast, on this very podcast, less than 4 months ago, I made a solemn pledge that I would watch 3 Vin Diesel movies in the year 2016. And I take my solemn pledges seriously. At the time that I made that pledge, I was what they would call a Vin Diesel virgin. Since I made that pledge, I've gone all the way with Vin twice.
Is it possible to be a virgin with Vin Diesel?
Not for long. That's what I'm saying. That guy romance.
Once you lay your eyes on him once, it's gone. You're there. You're all the way there. So you guys sat down together. And you watched The Fast and the Furious. Spence, you've seen Vin Diesel before, right?
I think the only Vin Diesel movie I had seen was Pitch Black. And that was the time that I watched it with you and Jordan and just made fun of it the whole time. So you kicked me out.
You have to take Diesel seriously if you're going to watch it. Yeah.
There are rules, Spence. There are rules. So I have to say, I prepared for this, Dave, and I prepared for watching The Fast and the Furious by watching XXX by myself, like 7 a.m. one morning, you know? Laurel and Cedar were out of town, and I was like, hey, I got some time before. It's like a weekend. I woke up early because my body's trained for it. So I was like, I'm going to watch XXX. Watch XXX, and I have to say, Vin was good in that movie, but you know who stole the show? The two Ivans.
No,
you remember the two Ivans?
It's been a little while since I've seen it, shockingly.
Well, go back and watch it and just pay close attention to the two Ivans, because one of the Ivans, Oscar-winning material. Like, I looked the guy up. I looked at his IMDb profile. I have a life goal to watch every film he's been in. I want this guy's complete filmography. The bald Ivan, the one who has the really moving death scene, guy is an incredible actor.
What's so good about that film is I think most men in it were named Ivan because it takes place in Eastern Europe, Russia area.
Yeah, they're not really clear about the country. It's just Eastern Europe. It wasn't maybe the most thoughtfully written script, but man, it hit all the major points.
Wait a sec. Are you implying it was not a documentary? You're confusing me at this moment.
There may have been a couple of plot holes, and we'll have to save that for another discussion. But that was what I did to prep, and so I'm like, okay, I got a taste of the Vin. And what I understood from that film is that I'm getting a protagonist who is muscular, who's at home in his own body, who's capable of being likable to really unlikable people without compromising his core. He'll go along with stuff, but deep down, this guy is wearing like a CTR ring underneath it all. He's going to choose the right, Dave. The guy's going to do the right thing. He's got a heart of gold. He's hardworking. He's physically imposing. He doesn't exactly follow the rules. Like, he doesn't obey the man, but he follows like the rules written on his heart.
Conscience. He obeys his conscience. He has integrity. Just real quick, give me your top scene from XXX.
Well, I just think I just described it. It's Ivan's death scene. It's really good. Anytime the two Ivans, but the one Ivan especially.
It's not the avalanche.
Yeah.
Even I know about the avalanche.
Yes, you're right. I forgot. It's the avalanche.
I mean, anybody that creates an avalanche in order to
snowboard
ride it down the mountain, that's...
And then like at the end, he holds on, oh, this is coming. So he like does a big jump and he grabs the top of some weather vane and like holds on to it while the avalanche comes up to like his chest and then he pulls himself out. I mean, like, super realistic.
That was actually a live stunt performed. The correct answer is the avalanche scene where Vin drops out of a helicopter on his snowboard. He starts snowboarding down and kind of looks behind him. He knows there's some bad guys coming and he he gets the dynamite out of his pack and boom, one over each shoulder, surfs down the avalanche.
Boom goes the dynamite.
But let's move on to probably Vin's most important role, Dominic Toretto.
I didn't even know he had a last name, Dave.
That's a ridiculous question. What are your takeaways from the film, Spence? The Fast and the Furious.
Don't mess with Vin. I mean, he's clearly the alpha dog.
Yes. Yeah.
My takeaway, I was entertained.
And Steele, your thoughts, maybe throw me your favorite scene from The Fast and the Furious.
Okay, well, first I want to say Spencer is perhaps the perfect Vin Diesel film watching partner. He's just like mostly silent, but like really skeptical of everything. So I loved watching it with Spencer. He's like, come on, that's not plausible. And I'd be able to look to him when amazing things happen. And I felt like the Dave of the situation going like, oh, like pulling my hair. And Spencer's just like totally unmoved. He's like, that wasn't that great. I mean, that's not real. The physics of that were just implausible. And so it made me feel like a little taste of what Dave might feel like when he talks to me about these films. Spencer was even more of a straight man than I am, Dave. I was believing. Spencer was doubting.
You got to ride the avalanche, Spence. You ride it.
Dave, I'm going to just cite a couple of lines, and you're going to tell me on a scale of 1 to 10 how amazing these lines are compared to the other Fast and Furious films. Okay, you ready?
Okay.
Streets closed, pizza boy. Better find a new way home.
I'm going to give that that's a 4.
So that's the first thing that I texted you, Dave, and that was the first clue you had that Spencer and I were watching the movie, and your immediate response within a couple of seconds, just wait until you watch Too Fast, Too Furious. Already, Dave, you weren't even letting me live in the moment. You were just reminding me that there's more Diesel. And so I was like, one at a time, Dave, living in the moment. And then I text you, I'll die before I go back. And instantly, you knew we were getting into the emotional territory there.
That's more of like a 7. Now you're really hitting it.
He just can't go back to prison. You know, it changes a man. The other line, this is great because Vin has a way of relating all of his bodily desires to caring for an automobile. It makes you really believe in the erotic charge of his relationship with his girlfriend. For example, at one point in the film, you can't detail a car with the cover on. Huh?
Oh, jeez. Oh, I mean, Vin, come on.
Layers and layers and layers. And Spencer at that point turns to me and says, this movie really is like a teenage boy's wet dream. And for me, that encapsulated like, yeah, this is why Dave loves Vin Diesel so much. This arrested adolescence. He's like, yes, this is everything I want in an action hero. Uh-huh. I'm 17. I'm in New Jersey. I weigh just over 100 pounds. But this guy is what I could be.
Steele, he lives his life a quarter mile at a time, and that's a 9 or a 10. That helps you understand what life should be, how you should be living. You live in the now, in the moment, and that's just one of the things that Vin teaches you through the series.
Mm. Here's a quote, Dave. That this is when the film got real for me and Spence. Before we were having a good time, Vin's sitting there, he's talking to Paul Walker, he's in a garage. Just showed him this car, and he says, I watched my dad burn to death. They said it was me screaming.
It's a haunting scene.
That's an 11, I have to say. I can't imagine that that's a scene that has many equals in cinematic history, much less Vin Diesel's acting career.
The thing is, throughout the series, anytime you can get just Vin and Paul in a room alone together, it's fireworks are going off. It's just powerful moments about fatherhood is a theme throughout the films, family, and then that, like, you feel Vin's pain. You understand why he has to illegal street race, what his motivations are, and I love Dominic Toretto.
Well, actually, I would say the outstanding performance of this movie, I would say Vin was really good, but what I was not prepared for was Dom's sister, and not just her performance, her eyebrows. They, I would think, the outstanding performers of the film. A lot of attention, a lot of screen time, occupied probably 80% of the screen whenever she was being shot. You know, I was like, those eyebrows really got the job done. So whoever was involved with casting them, nice work.
Mia, she's with us throughout the series. There's some emotional highs and lows. Spoiler alert, she is the mother to Paul Walker's children.
What?
It's,
oh, man.
It's just the depths and the places they go. It's so good.
So Spence, the question I had for Spence that I didn't ask him during the movie, but like when Paul Walker is making love to Mia, on a scale of 1 to 100, how likely do you think it is that he's imagining that he's making love to Dom?
Do I have to answer that for just Paul Walker or for every person? Because I think that's like 110.
Yeah, I really do. I think there's like 0% chance that Mia's anything but like a surrogate for Paul Walker, and like he's just imagining. He says to her, "The only thing that pulled me in was you. Your brother's just a bonus." But that's the biggest lie of the movie. It's the other way around. 100%.
Yeah. He totally misspoke. He didn't mean to say bonus.
He meant to put a pause between those two syllables.
So let me ask you guys a question. So as the film is coming to a close, things are coming to a head. Brian, he's undercover.
Ooh.
He's got a turn on Vin. The chase is happening. There's crashing. What did you guys see coming? Did you think that Brian was going to take Vin in? What did you think was going to happen?
No, so obviously we knew there were sequels.
Yeah, exactly. I was curious to know how it was going to work out because I couldn't see. I knew there were sequels. I knew that they were friends eventually. But I thought he's in a tight spot. How's he going to get out of this?
When people start getting assassinated in the street, I'm like, okay, yeah, that's got a little more serious than everything else happened at this point. I think there's probably got to be some police consequences here. But then I just didn't see that immortal line, Dave. I forgot. They'd set me up, but I wasn't ready for it. And it was a real surprise when he said, "I owe you a 10-second car." And then I was like, yep, they got me. I was like, Spence, let's just pay for the second film and watch it right now.
It's a perfect ending to a movie, but the thing is, it's not an ending. It's a perfect beginning. Spence, you misspoke when you said they're going to be friends, because that's not factually correct. They're brothers.
So just set the record straight. Now, when I texted Dave that final line, this is really tender, Dave. Do you remember what you wrote back?
I don't.
He said, "I keep wanting to respond with swear words. F yeah! !" But you literally wrote F-dash-dash-dash. Even then, your restraint was impeccable. I'm just so impressed, man. You have a code, Dave. You're like a little Dom.
Last week we talked about tattoos, that we were going to get me Familia.
Yeah.
You know the inspiration for that. That's Dom, 100%. Yeah. So we're you know, a quarter away into the tattoo process right now. And I thank Dom every day for the idea and for my family, our motto, our family crest or whatever. It's one word. It's family. And nice. That's from Dom.
We talked about sports last week too. Last time I was on, if you could get a sports jersey with Tourette on it, would you?
Wow. Good question, Spence.
That's a hard hitting one. Of course, Spence. That's ridiculous.
Big question. Yeah, Who's his team?
He's from LA. That's where he's from. That's where he lives. I feel like he'd be a Dodgers guy. That's just what I feel. So guys, I'm so excited. I could talk about this for the rest of my life, but Vin is a topic that not everyone is super interested in, but that I'm so glad that you did it. I look forward to you seeing another film, and we're going to have to just go into depth with it. And I'm so glad you guys watched it together. My advice, if you want to skip Too Fast, Too Furious and Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift and jump right into the Fast and Furious, the fourth film, you can do it.
Okay.
You're not going to – Vin Diesel isn't in the previous two films. You're going to miss Dom. And you're going to be really happy to see him in the fourth movie.
Two things for you, Dave. One, Spencer and I already have a plan, and we're going to hang tight on the Fast and the Furious. We saw a taste, but I was going to do the Iron Giant. You recommended that as like my first film, but I just jumped into the real Vin. And since I'm there, Spencer and I are planning to watch Pitch Black again together. We got to wait for a time when our significant others are out of town, so we have nothing to live for, and then we're going to watch that movie.
Yeah, with a little less snark on my end, hopefully.
Just dive in, Spence. My only word of warning is there's two more Riddick movies after Pitch Black, so just be careful.
So we'll start it at like 6 so we could watch them both.
And you're
going
to be like, I got to keep going.
Dave, the other thing, we need to make an announcement, world premiere announcement. There is a sister website for those people who are fans of Off the Chain. that I believe you're a proprietor of now that you may want to take a second to kind of plug here.
I'm really excited about it. We've talked about a few of the scenes that we've actually focused on the website. The website is The Greatest Moments in Cinema History, just really parsed down to thegmch.com, just so it can really catch in your memory.
The Gimmitch?
The Gimmitch. We're just going in through Venn Films, through Liam Neeson's, Keanu Reeves, anything that's been the greatest thing that's ever happened in cinema history. We're talking about the scenes. We're diagnosing. We're really getting in deep. Right now, me and Jordan, Jordan Fox, been on this frequently. He's involved pretty heavily. We're getting some other contributors, and it's really important work. That's why we're doing it.
Highbrow, I would say, cinema criticism. My favorite feature of this site is that you consistently spell Liam Neeson's last name with a terminal S. I don't know if that's intentional or if it's just like your enthusiasm for him is so much. I was expecting that there'd be like several acting Neesons that you're describing, but it really is just one. But he's so good that he's plural. That's how the site treats the Liam Neeson.
And the post I just made today is about Neesons being in a sword fight. And
Neesons.
Like the obvious move. Like, you know what you need to do. He's about to get killed. He's dropped his sword. The other guy's just holding his sword at his neck. Like, what do? You grab the sword.
Move
your
neck.
But you have to be as tough as Neeson's to just grab the sword. He grabs the sword.
Rob Roy, yeah. You told me about that one. I'm going to have to see that one day. Anyway, we covered Running on Gas, Dave.
Yeah.
I'm feeling high-powered. I'm feeling fueled up.
And then so let's move on. This next section, this is something that Spence has brought to our attention, the importance of. And we're going to have a little off-the-chain debate. And the thing we're discussing is artificial intelligence. The first question, do you think that artificial intelligence, AI, do you think that's achievable?
No, it's not. I don't think so.
Wow.
I think that we will mimic intelligence, but never truly achieve intelligence.
Artificially or otherwise, Spencer is pretty convinced humans will not even attain intelligence. No, I think Spence is clearly wrong about this, and I think he's forgetting about the core gameplay features of NBA Live 2K5. It was 2K6? They had really advanced AI. Like, when you're passing the ball into the low block, the defender would often front the defense. I mean, like, the AI in that game was really good. And I think, if anything, Spence, it just shows a faulty memory about, like, this was 10 years old. This game had AI down. I think we've already achieved artificial intelligence, and one needs to look no further than the EA Sports franchise of video games.
I never played that one, but I spent a lot of time playing Tecmo Bowl, and that's some pretty dumb artificial intelligence there. You just get Bo Jackson, and you can run in circles around the defense.
That's true. So basically.
That's the infancy of artificial intelligence. Spence, you can't expect AI to have full control of its abilities right when it's born. So I think
Tecmo Bowl is the pinnacle of technological achievements.
He has
that
a
is
point,
a great game.
Dave. He's got a point.
And we're going to move on as if AI is possible, because of course we know it is. Would AI be beneficial to the human race?
No. An intelligent agent would know that human beings are bad for the planet and would want to work to remove them.
That is the plot to most science fiction stories. Spence, your thoughts?
You're totally wrong, Steele. AI, assuming that this is achievable, would be a tremendous breakthrough. Humans would no longer have to work, because you can build robots to do everything for you. Humans get to spend all of their time dedicating themselves to the arts, dedicating themselves to improving themselves. We no longer live by the sweat of our brow.
Spence. We all know human beings have done really great historically when they've been given a surfeit of leisure time and just said, hey, you don't have any obligations. Just do what you feel. They make really good decisions. So, yeah, good track record there.
I agree. That's when we begin to transcend humanity. So, follow-up question. This approach is something Spence just addressed. So, are Asimov's three laws of robotics – do you think those are necessary for the control of robots? Those being, of course, one, a robot may not injure a human being, or through inaction allow a human being to come to harm. 2, a robot must obey orders given by a human, except if when it conflicts with the first law. And 3rd law, a robot must protect its own existence, except when it conflicts with the first and second laws.
So I don't think that they're necessary. And in fact, I see some contradiction in here. So
really?
Yeah, a robot is not allowed to cause harm to a human or through inaction allow a human to come into harm. Mm-hmm. But what happens if there are two humans and the robot has to choose between either harming one or allowing harm to happen to the other?
Robo Sophie's Choice.
Robots exploding.
And you joke, Spence, but that does happen, unfortunately.
And it will happen.
These things, a robot can be confounded.
No robot can serve two masters, Dave.
That's right.
Sounds like it's more like Isaac Asimov, if you ask me.
Hey, don't go there. This is a great man. Follow-up question. Does awareness, artificial intelligence, if this is truly achieved, does that then make this machine or robot a living being?
No, I don't think that self-consciousness is the litmus test for being alive. And I don't even think self-awareness is, because I think I'd be willing to recognize all kinds of sentient beings as living things, even if they don't have the same degree of self-awareness or even self-consciousness.
Like Jonathan Stover?
Very low levels of self-consciousness and yet nominally alive.
So Steele, let's say, you know, if you had to hunt for an animal, I think it would be something that you'd really have a difficult time with. You wouldn't want to do it. But let's say you're in a situation where you had to hunt for a sentient, aware robot. You'd be much more comfortable with it.
I'd sign up to be a robot hunter. I'm waiting for them to make that reality series. I'd blast robots to death with bazookas if I could. I have a blood. I've got a blood grudge against robots. I'd no problem there.
Robots. A sentient robot has a personality. I'd have a hard time taking a robot down. I mean, like, could you imagine killing Johnny Five?
Yes.
That would be horrible.
In a heartbeat.
No.
C-3PO. R2-D2. I'd bomb them all.
No, Johnny Five. Johnny Five is adorable.
So we've established Steele is a monster. So a follow-up question, and I already know Steele's response to this. Is it appropriate to create robot gladiators and watch them fight? So
no.
Spence, what do you think?
No, Dave.
What?
I mean, we kind of do that with real people, right? We have boxers and wrestlers. I think it's okay as long as they don't kill each other.
And still you're against this?
Yeah, prohibition against robot fighting. It just seems barbaric and cruel. We cause creatures under our command to wreck destruction against one another. What's the positive goal for that? That's like taking two ants and putting them in a box and making them fight.
But
so it's cruel.
We can kill robots, but we can't make them kill each other?
Yeah, we should kill robots, but we shouldn't make them kill each other. Just because there's no point in that. The point in us killing robots is getting rid of this thing that has a face but isn't alive.
So,
but the thing is, this can be a great premise for a movie. Isn't this the whole plot of Real Steel?
Wait, what?
Yeah, Real. I think Steel. You actually wrote this film because your name's in the title.
It's my life story. Real Steel, Robot Hunter.
It's a classic Hugh Jackman robot fighting film that I actually watched alone in an IMAX with Zach Buse, a previous guest on your fantastic movie. So a couple more questions before we close up this debate, which I think it's been pretty hard hitting. So what about recording human brain waves and then placing them in a robot frame, thus creating immortality?
I'm not really sure how that works, but I'm all for it if they can do it. I want to live forever.
It depends on whose brain waves.
Steel?
If we're talking about like Ted Williams, yeah. I would think that we should only record the brainwaves of people who have already agreed to be cryogenically frozen. Whatever brain activity we can detect from people who are currently in cryogenic frozen freezers, let them just keep those brains going. Put them in robot bodies and then hunt the hell out of those robots.
If there was one person that we could have captured their brainwaves from the past, who would it be, Steele? Who do you want?
Screaming Jay.
Oh my goodness. I was going to say Screaming Jay.
What, is there awesome. Any other possible answer, Spence?
No, clearly not. We both came up with the same one.
That would be one. That would be one funky lovemaking robot. Let me tell you what. Yeah,
there would be a lot of little robots on the way.
Cyborgs.
So So, Steele, when you finally caught up to Screaming J-Bot and destroy him, like, would you feel sad as you do this?
No, I'd feel I'd never felt more virile, more alive. To take the life force and energy from the sexiest robot on the planet means that I am suddenly the most attractive alpha male to all potential mates. I mean, I've just dominated. I've just exhibited some conquest over the robot herd.
All right. So final question, guys. Spencer denies it, but we know AI is out there.
Yeah.
Is this
and
going
he hates
to
practice,
take over?
Dave. He hates practice.
Is AI going to take over humanity? And what do you see happening if it does?
I think it already is. I mean, we trust our phones to give us directions. We rely on like the television to inform us about everything around us. We're slowly moving towards that. The robots are taking over.
This is why it is every noble human's born and sworn duty to hunt and destroy all robots. It's a simple proposition. I don't know why it's not self-evident to both of you, unless Moloch worshiper over there may secretly be a robot, as we've long suspected.
Oh, boy. So still, you on this debate topic, I'd say you agree with the right wing, the conservatives, probably the guys up in Oregon, the standoff dudes. It's interesting to hear you say these things.
I agree with the right wing, if by right you mean correct. Yeah, sure. I think my opinions are pretty milquetoast, pretty uncontroversial here, really, Dave. I don't know why you're blowing this all out of proportion and acting like I'm some kind of radical extremist on the issue. I'm pretty mild
and
moderate.
You're right in line with Ted Nugent.
All I'm asking for is the ultimate and total eradication of all forms of robot sentience. That's all. It's pretty modest.
So that's great. I think
you're convinced.
As a closing, yeah, I'm in. Let's get some rifles and get going.
Dave, you know what we should? This would be great. Like if we wrote like fan fiction sequel to The Road, and secretly we revealed that everybody else in The Road, except for the dad and his son, were robots.
What, the dad didn't really die at the end? He was just going into a brief coma?
It's all part of the vast robot conspiracy.
I'll email you chapter one tomorrow, and you email me chapter two the next day.
That's going to be book wisdom next week, folks. Tune in for book wisdom.
So, guys, thanks for participating in that hot-hitting debate that I think is a pretty important topic for us all. And that brings us into our Unchained Melodies, which the theme of is, of course, technology overcoming humanity. So I'm going to start us off in the right place, and that's by playing Radiohead's Everything in Its Right Place. To get everything in the right place except by artificial intelligence overcoming humanity.
Spotify tells me, Dave, that this song was music from the movie Vanilla Sky. That song appeared in a Tom Cruise movie? That seems so profoundly wrong.
That's when you don't understand that Tom Cruise is, in fact, a robot.
That makes way more sense. Dave, I got a song for you. This is a little bit more positive take on the whole proper relationship between a human and a robot. This is by Looper.
So, wait, you didn't just say Radiohead. I'm confused.
Yeah, this is by a song by the band Looper.
Wait, Steele, are you aware? So the theme is technology overcoming humanity. Just clarifying that for you.
So do you mean Radiohead uses a lot of loops? Yeah. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, this is a song by Radiohead's Looper. It's called My Robot. Very early Tom York.
Send them out in the mornings to see what he could see, just to roll around the city and store it all up in his memory. And then when he got back, he could cut up the drum breaks, make the loops.
Tom doesn't do a lot of spoken word tracks. It's interesting.
Who knew he had a Scottish brogue?
I thought he was from Oxford.
Well, North Oxford.
Spence, you know the theme. Which Radiohead song are you presenting us with?
Yeah, so this is videotape because the robots are recording everything.
Beautiful.
And he shakes his head like a maniac anytime he sings, even when he's singing slowly like that.
Programmed. Glitchy.
Yep.
I love that song. When that came out, that was one of my theme songs that I just repeated over and over again. So I'm going to follow it up with another Radiohead masterpiece. This is more about the dangers of artificial intelligence, because who can testify for the sanity of artificial intelligence? Maybe it won't stay sane. So this one's called Paranoid Android.
Thank you.
So we had a dance party tonight, me and my 3-year-old daughters listening to Radiohead. I wanted them to dance like Tom, so I told them, dance like you're about to fall down, and they caught on pretty good.
Nice. I think that the line, though, Dave, when I am king, you'll be the first against the wall, that's basically Tom's message to us about how we should treat robots. Line them up against the wall. He's threatening him, rightly.
Do you need guns for that, or can you just use electromagnetic pulses?
I don't know the technical details. All I know is it's our duty to hunt them down and destroy them to death. Not a scientist.
This might be my all-time favorite Radiohead song. This is all about those people who sit around thinking that AI isn't a big deal, living life in their glass house. That song is so Spencer.
It's so good. I've put that song in a previous show, but I didn't say anything because I love that song so much. If any song needs to be played twice on our ridiculous podcast, it's that one.
Well, guys, I appreciate your profoundly misplaced love of robots. And I want to remind you about what makes us human. Why the technology will never overcome us, will never take us over, and what it is that we're really about as the members of the human species. This is a song that's designed to move you, to stir the humanity in you. It's the Norwegian songwriter Anne Brun from her newest record, When I'm Free, and the song is All We Want Is Love.
Not many people know that Tom York has this alter ego, but I recognized his trademark falsetto there.
And that's why the robots will never win, gentlemen. They don't know what love is.
That, You're going to be blasting that on your boombox as you murder countless robots.
Yeah, me and my flamethrower can be like torching the hell out of metallic robots with that song playing as loud as I can make it play.
It's a beautiful song.
It was beautiful. And another episode of Off the Chain has to come to a close. So let's close this down the right way with a terribly sad poem shared to us from Steele.
I love this poem. Just read it recently. Won a Pushcart Prize. It was published in the journal Rattle. It's by David Kirby. It's called More Than This. When you tell me that a woman is visiting the grave of her college friend and she's trying not to get irritated at the man in the red truck who keeps walking back and forth and dropping tools as he listens to a pro football game on the truck radio, which is much too loud, I start to feel as though I know where this story is going. So I say, stop. You're going to make me cry. How sad the world is. When young men died in the mud of Flanders, the headmaster called their brothers out of the classroom one by one. But when the older brothers began to die by the hundreds every day, they simply handed the child a note as he did his lessons. And of course the boy wouldn't cry in front of the others, though at night the halls were filled with the sound of schoolboys sobbing for the dead, young men only slightly older than themselves. Yet the world's beauty breaks our hearts as well. The old cowboy is riding along and looks down at his dog and realizes she died a long time ago, and that his horse did as well, and this makes him wonder if he is dead too. And as he's thinking this, he comes to a big shiny gate that opens onto a golden highway, and there's a man in a robe and white wings, and when the cowboy asks what this place is, the man tells him it's heaven and invites him in, though he says animals aren't allowed. So the cowboy keeps going till he comes to an old rusty gate with the road full of weeds and potholes on the other side and a guy on a tractor, and the guy wipes his brow and says, you three must be thirsty. Come in and get a drink. And the cowboy says, okay, but what is this place? And the guy says, it's heaven. And the cowboy says, then what's that place down the road with the shiny gate and the golden highway? And when the guy says, oh, that's hell. The cowboy says, doesn't it make you mad that they're pretending to be you? And the guy on the tractor says, no. We like it that they screen out the folks who desert their friends. You tell me your friend can't take it anymore. And she turns to confront the man who's making all the noise, to beg him to leave her alone with her grief. And that's when she sees that he's been putting up a Christmas tree on his son's grave, and that he's grieving too, but in his own way. One that is not better or worse than the woman's. Just different. The kind of grief that says the world is so beautiful that it will give you no peace. And that's a poem.
Yes, that was a great poem.
It was terribly sad. I knew it would be still.
But beautiful, Dave, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was beautiful.
I love the depiction of heaven and hell.
Yeah.
That's awesome. You know, Vin would be going to real heaven.
Yeah.
Jeez, he'd never leave. He would never leave a brother behind. Never.
I figured you'd appreciate that, Dave. That's your kind of poem right there.
Yeah, guys, I'll never leave you behind. Steele, if we're at the gates of heaven, I'll drag you in, man.
Thanks.
It's funny, the NPR station up here is the worst. It just plays classical music almost the entire day. And I want to hear some talk, but right as I drive back from my lunch break, it's always Garrison Keillor's like daily poem thing. So I hear a poem almost every day now, and it's like I really actually kind of enjoy it. I blame you, Steele.
Nice. I think what's sweet, Dave, is that you live in small town America and you drive home every day for your lunch break. That's something that doesn't happen in the rest of the world. I hope you know that. How lovely that is.
It's awesome. I have to make lunch, though. Sometimes I read books to my girls. Sometimes we have a little dance party if there's time at lunch. Push them on the swings. It's awesome.
It's a good life, man.
I have a goal to sometime in my life live within walking distance of home so that I can go home for lunch.
Hold on. Live within walking... Oh, of work. Sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Live within walking distance of home.
Yeah.
Are you in a trial separation right now, Spence?
The restraining order is has a radius on it.
I cut this damn ankle bracelet off.
All right. I guess that's the show, right? Good night and good luck. We appreciate you, Spencer. I appreciate you, Steele. You're my brothers. And I won't leave you at the gate, guys.
No. Come on in and have a drink of water. You look thirsty.
Never give up.
Family.
You know Vin wouldn't.
Good night. Okay. Good to see you guys.
Off the chain. It's off the chain.
When I opened my the letter assigning me to my dorm room and telling me my roommate was Stillman Craig Wagstaff.
Trust fund, baby.
I was like, that name's got to be a joke, right?
Eccentric fox hunter. They said I'm sort of coming on a lifelong registry, but I don't know what that means.
Weird dudes do a lot of weird stuff.